Hello, I'm Trey Marone, and welcome to the West Virginia EDUCAST. In today's episode, we are covering the County Board of Education's annual evaluation of its superintendent under West Virginia law. This process is one that can enhance the superintendent's effectiveness and can also help assure the County Board that its policies, programs, and initiatives are implemented to the board's satisfaction. Annual superintendent evaluations clarify for the superintendent and the board members the responsibilities the superintendent is to fulfill. At its best, the evaluation process is a structured opportunity for discussion of the superintendent's overall effectiveness and for the superintendent to receive feedback from the board about areas of commendation and areas of continued growth and development. You know, this is actually a two-part episode, something we do from time to time when the topic has important distinct components, each of which we want to be sure to commit sufficient time of discussion. Our focus in this episode, or part one, is on the steps of the evaluation process required by West Virginia's school laws. We will review and highlight recent amendments made to the evaluation process by the State Board of Education. The second episode we will do, or part two, will focus on perhaps the most important component of the evaluation process, developing early in the school year the goals or objectives on which the superintendent's performance will be measured. So in part one, we'll discuss the evaluation process itself, and in part two, we will focus on the development of goals or objectives to be used during the evaluation process. Arrangements for these episodes were made by the West Virginia School Board Association. And as an important note for our listeners, if you will go to the association's website, you will find written materials that, in conjunction with this podcast, may be very helpful towards understanding the obligations and options of county boards of education in undertaking and making the annual evaluation of their superintendent's performance. Joining me now in part one of this two-part episode to discuss the required steps of the evaluation process is Howard Sufer. Howard is an attorney and the senior member of the Bowles-Rice Education Law Group. He has served as the West Virginia School Board Association's general counsel for over 30 years, including in 2003 when the West Virginia legislature and then the West Virginia State Board of Education first required county boards of education to annually evaluate the performance of their superintendents. Welcome, Howard.
Thank you, Trey. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you back. Howard, you know, let's just go back to 2003. What happened in 2003 to first require county boards of education to annually evaluate the performance of their superintendents?
Well, Trey, you're exactly right. Prior to 2003, there was no requirement in West Virginia law that a Board of Education ever evaluate its superintendent. But in that year, the legislature enacted what we now know as West Virginia Code 18-4-6. That's a statute, a school law, that mandated for the first time that every county board of education annually evaluate the performance of its superintendent. That statute, which is still on the books and it hasn't been changed since 2003, requires that the process that a county board of education uses to evaluate its superintendent be written out and approved by the state board of education before it can be used by the county board. The statute back in 2003 said, as it still does today, that the West Virginia School Board Association would maintain a catalog or a file at its office with helpful documents and model forms and policies that county boards of education could consult in working their way through this requirement of a superintendent's evaluation. The statute also said that there are some minimum elements that every county board's evaluation of its superintendent must include. And among those were the notion that every county board has to work with its superintendent to define the goals or objectives that the superintendent will be evaluated on, and that that happened early in the year, that it's a mutual collaboration between the county board and the superintendent in establishing these goals, that they're written goals with timelines, and that whatever else those goals include, one of them has to address success in improving student achievement generally and specifically in low-performing schools. So So that's the only goal that the legislature in 2003 and to this day has required be in the evaluation process. There were some optional elements, and there still are, that the statute allows county boards to use in evaluating their superintendents over and above these goals that are set earlier in the year. And when this evaluation is done late in the year, the statute says if a county board wants to, it can also evaluate its superintendent's performance in the areas of community relations, school finance, personnel relations, curricular standards and programs, and finally, overall leadership of the school district, as indicated primarily by improvements in student achievement. So those are what the legislature said. A county board may exercise its discretion to include in the evaluation. And then finally, the statute said, and it does still today, that the evaluation of the superintendent must occur in executive session. It's one of the rare cases in the school laws where a board doesn't have a choice about whether to go into executive session or not when an executive session would be appropriate. The statute said, and it still says, that that evaluation must be conducted in executive session. And that once the evaluation is done, its details are not released to the public. Instead, the statute says that a general statement shall be made available to the public about the evaluation process and the overall result. If any additional information is to be released about the evaluation, the statute says it has to be done only with the consent of the school board and the superintendent. So neither the school board or its members or the superintendent can elaborate on this general statement that's made available to the public about the process and the overall result. And then finally, the statute stated, and it still does, that if a board wants to, it's not required to, but if it wants to, it can use the results of the evaluation to decide whether to give the sitting superintendent another contract when their current contract expires. And they can, if they want to, use the results of the evaluation to decide whether in any such next contract, the compensation or the benefit should be set at a particular level. So those are the things that the legislature decreed have to be done or can be done with respect to the evaluation of the superintendent. And that law has remained intact and the same ever since 2003. Now, one final feature of the law was it required the State Board of Education to adopt a policy that implements this whole process. And so in 2003, the State Board of Education adopted a policy, policy 5309. That's one of the materials available on the School Board Association's website for people who are following this episode of the podcast. And that policy 5309, which was adopted in 2003, took effect January 1 of 2004 and covered evaluations of superintendents for the 2004-2005 school year. So that's the first year that the state statute and the state board policy applied to county boards evaluating their superintendents. And basically, the state board policy parroted the terms of the state statute, because obviously the state board can't change the statute. So they included in their policy the things we just talked about. But then they added a few practical details, which is, I think, what the legislature intended by asking the state board to adopt a policy. One is that they mandated that in order to get state board approval of their processes for evaluating the superintendent, county boards had to put that process they proposed to use in writing and send it to the state board for approval. And those were all due by December 31st of 2004, which is 6 months before the new school year would kick in when the process had to be followed. And I think all 55 boards met that deadline and had their processes in and approved. And the state board's policy also says that if a county, after their process was approved, in some later year decided to change it, they had to go back to the state board and get permission to change their process. The state board policy said something that the state statute passed by the legislature did not. And that is that county boards cannot, they're not allowed to use any other process to evaluate their superintendents except the one that is sent into the state board and approved by the state board. And then the state board policy has the required elements of the county's processes, which basically, again, track the statute. They did add a few details. They said that these goals that have to be mutually established between the superintendent and the board have to be established by September 15th of each year, and that the review itself of the superintendent's performance must be completed before June 30. But if the superintendent's contract is about to expire on June 30, then the evaluation has to be completed by March 1. So ordinarily, June 30 is the deadline, but March 1 is the deadline if your superintendent's contract is going to expire on June 30. Finally, the state board policy required that the State School Board Association and the Association of School Administrators get together and provide training to school board members in this whole process that had just been enacted by the legislature and the state board.
Well, that's a lot of very, very valuable information for our listeners to take away from this episode. And never fear, we're going to circle back and revisit most everything Howard just said throughout this episode. And one thing, though, that from his response that I think we heard repeatedly is that the state statute that was enacted in 2003 has not changed. The state board adopted a policy that went into effect in 2004. So the state statute hasn't changed since 2003, Howard. So what has changed that leads us here today?
Good point, Trey, and something all school board members need to be aware of. In August of 2021, the state board reviewed that policy that it enacted way back in 2003, and it made a few changes. It amended the policy, and this amended policy went into effect on September 15th. However, the policy itself says that the changes it made would not affect the superintendent's evaluations for the current school year, 2021-2022, that those changes in the procedure that had been in place for almost 20 years, those changes that were enacted in August will only affect performance evaluations for the 2022-2023 school year. And we'll talk about those changes in a moment. They are relatively modest. This is not a revolutionary change in the process. They're relatively modest. However, an important point is that they do require, like the policy did way back at the beginning, they do require each county to submit to the state board a written description of the process that they will use beginning with the 2022-23 school year to evaluate their superintendents. And that has to be approved by the state board before a county can then proceed to evaluate their superintendents as they're required to do for 2022-2023. And the amended policy warns that counties better get those policies or written procedures in by December 31st of 2021, or else it's possible the state board won't be able to consider them and act on them in time for the beginning of the 2022-2023 school year. I think by now, most counties, if not all of them, have submitted their policies. The School Board Association supplied to counties a template, a model policy that they could consider adopting to satisfy the requirements of the changed or amended state board policy. And I know many counties borrowed from that template in doing so. And in addition to some other changes I'll point out in a bit, the amended policy also requires that all county board members and all superintendents must again receive evaluation training before participating in any way in the evaluation process for the 2022-2023 school year and subsequent years.
So that template that you mentioned, that's also available on the School Board Association's website, isn't it?
Yes.
Very, very helpful. Okay, so while the state code did not change, the state board policy has changed. And we know that county boards of education are subject to state board policies and that they must be followed. Before we get into the specific changes made by State Board Policy 5309 in August of this year, can we take a few minutes to review again the most important standards that continue to exist under the statute and that were not changed by the amended state board policy, and that, you know, county boards and their superintendents are going to have to follow these in the evaluation process for the school year 2022-2023. And let's kind of take those one at a time and start with the timeline that a county board's evaluation of its superintendent must meet. Has that changed?
No, it hasn't, Trey. As we said before, a county must complete its evaluation annually of the superintendent by June 30, unless the superintendent's contract is going to expire on June 30, and then they have to have it done by March 1 of that year. And way back at the beginning of that year, the superintendent and the board still have to have the superintendent's goals and objectives established and in writing before September 15th. That hasn't changed.
Okay. So the timeline regarding when the goals or objectives are to be set and when the evaluation must be completed, the timeline has not changed in either of those respects. Well, what about how the results of the performance evaluation are used? Are there ways that the results must or may be used?
Nothing has changed there. Of course, the state statute hasn't changed. The amended state board policy still does not require a county board to base any decisions about a superintendent's future on the outcome of the evaluation. It still says that a county board may, if it chooses to, use the results of the evaluation to decide whether to offer the superintendent another contract when their current contract expires. And they may, but don't have to, use the results of the evaluation to decide if a new contract is offered to the superintendent, what the level of compensation and benefits might be. But that's all optional. There's no requirement that a board do that.
Is that component about whether or not you're going to use the evaluation, is that something that should be set forth in the county board's policy?
I don't see that that's a requirement in terms of the process that has to be approved by the State Board of Education before a school district and superintendent begin the evaluation process in 2022-2023. We're required to describe the process to be used and get it approved. But there's nothing in the policy that says you also have to get approval for how you use the results.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the evaluation process. It has steps to it, right?
It does. It has 7 steps.
Okay. And there are standards for taking those steps. So what standards must the county's process for evaluating its superintendents meet? In other words, what steps must be followed by every school board beginning with the school year 2022-2023?
Well, they're spelled out against some of them still in the statute, some of them in the amended state board policy. But these are things you think are on the checklist that the State Board of Education is going to use in looking at the submissions counties have made and deciding whether to approve their process. And so that is the first standard that the process the county uses must meet. And that is you have to have State Board approval of the process you're going to use to evaluate your superintendent. The second standard that every process has to have in it, it has to provide for mutually establishing the superintendent's goals and objectives in writing with timelines for completion. Every county's process has to require that, and that it occur by September 15th. Now, a tiny change that the amended policy has made there is that it didn't used to say what those goals have to be or what has to be in them. The amended policy does say at least one goal must relate to student achievement. So that's the second standard. We have to establish goals by collaboration of the superintendent and the board. They have to be in writing. They have to have timelines for completion. And at least one of them must relate to student achievement. The third standard that the process must satisfy is that in arriving at goals and objectives for the superintendent by September 15, the board and the superintendent must consider input from other parties, such as citizens and school employees, but in a manner determined by the board and the superintendent. It used to be that the policy said you could consider input from third parties. It now said you must. It doesn't say which parties. It just says such as citizens and school employees. And it doesn't say how you receive that input in establishing the superintendent's goals and objectives. It just says that you do it in a manner determined by the board and the superintendent. So we want to be sure that we get some third party input into establishing these goals and objectives, but who those third parties are and how it's done is up to the board. The fourth standard that every process must meet is that if the board and the superintendent are at loggerheads and can't arrive at an agreement as to what the superintendent's goals and objectives must be, the process that the county gets approved by the state board has to say, what are we going to do then? The state board policy, as amended, suggests it doesn't require that maybe in a case like that, the county and the superintendent would petition the state board to appoint a facilitator to work with them in trying to arrive at goals. Another example that's in the policy that a board might want to do is to engage the School Board Association and the Association of School Administrators to get involved to facilitate an agreement. But those are just examples. A county is free in its process to come up with some other way to address disagreement between the superintendent and the board, but they have to have something in there. The fifth standard is that by the time the assessment is due, which is June 30, or in some cases, March 1st, the board, this evaluation it does, has to include an assessment of the superintendent's achievement of the written goals and objectives that were set back before September 15. And it must evaluate the superintendent's success in improving student achievement generally and across the county, and specifically as it relates to low-performing schools. So at a minimum, the evaluation has to compare the superintendent's performance to the goals and also talk about success in improving student achievement. The sixth item is that if a county wants to, as we said, it can include in the process that it asks the state board to approve some additional items on which the superintendent will be evaluated. And those are the community relations, school finance, personnel relations, curriculum standards, and overall leadership of the county. And if the board exercises those options, then those should be in the county board's process that they've asked the State Board of Education to approve. And in that submission to the State Board, they have to say, which of those things are we going to include in the evaluation? How are we going to assess those things? Are we going to use ratings or rankings? And then finally, both the statute and the state board policy have always given the county board the option, and still give the county board the option, of also evaluating other duties of the superintendent as the chief executive officer of the school district as set forth in the superintendent's contract or in any other written agreement the superintendent has with the board. And the seventh piece of it says you can also have the option of evaluating the degree to which the superintendent continuously apprises the board of any issues that affect the board or its schools, its programs, and initiatives. So not a lot has changed, but there's a lot in there. And those seven steps are things we want to be sure that every county has considered in developing and then following its process.
Yes, all seven steps, certainly very, very important. And you made mention and highlighted those that have been changed, you know, by this policy and how those changes will take place. And we'll visit that again in a minute. I was just recalling, Howard, you know, I was a school board member for a number of years. And when I was a school board member, we performed the superintendent's evaluations in executive session. Is that still permitted?
In fact, it's not just permitted, it's required. You have no option as a school board to say, well, we're not going to do this in executive session. It must occur in executive session. And on a related point, the statute and the state board policy have never said whether back in the first of the year, when you're setting the superintendent's goals and objectives, whether that has to happen in executive session or whether that can occur in public. And there've been no lawsuits about that. Very little legal authority. There is a state superintendent's interpretation of school law that advises that that too must occur in executive session. It's an integral part of the evaluation process, and therefore falls under the requirement that the evaluation occur in executive session. So setting the goals and objectives according to the state superintendent is also something that must occur in executive session.
Well, that certainly makes sense. You know, conducting the superintendent's evaluation in executive session is consistent with how the evaluations of all school system employees are conducted privately, not publicly, right?
That's correct.
What must or may the board and superintendent release to the public about the results of the evaluation of the superintendent's performance?
Well, Trey, the statute and the policy have always required the school board to make available to the public what we've mentioned is described as a statement about the evaluation process and the overall result. And the amended policy 5309 carries that same language forward, but adds to it that in that general statement to the public, we not only give a general statement about the evaluation process and the overall result, but we also have to address the superintendent's progress in meeting goals that were established by September 15. And the policy still says, as it did before, that any additional information about the evaluation may be released by the superintendent, by the board, or any board member only by mutual consent of the superintendent and the board. So you may leave an executive session not agreeing with what the majority of the board has decided is the superintendent's performance. You're not allowed to go out and give any details about that process in public unless the superintendent and the board agree to that.
Well, you know, this is an important point about this public statement because, you know, my experience as well as a board member is that you know, the statement made to the public, it does result from the input of all the board members, you know, during the process. There's discussion during the evaluation process and executive session. So the public statement does result from that. But the board members, you know, may not all say exactly the same thing, you know, when you're talking about things in executive session. But the statement does reflect, you know, the general statement from the board about the superintendent. You know, thinking about what you've just told us about the procedure counties are to follow in evaluating their superintendents, it sounds like almost all the requirements are the same for 2022-23 and subsequent years as they were for many years before August when the State Board of Education amended Policy 5309. So could you take a minute to point out the amendments or changes that the State Board made in August that are to take effect for the 2022-2023 school year for the evaluations of superintendents?
Trey, you make a really important point there. There's been some loose discussion around the state while the State Board was considering amending its policy and did amend it. Loose talk to the effect that they've really changed the process in ways that either help or hurt a board or a superintendent in this process. And when you look at it, stand back from it, the changes are relatively modest. The process we're going to use in 2022-23 is almost identical to what we've been using every year since boards were first required to start using an annual evaluation back in 2004-2005. It's fair to say the only changes of any consequence are five. First, it's a requirement that we get our county procedures, our policies about the evaluation approved by the State Board. We haven't had to do that since 2004. Well, now we have to do it again. A second is the new requirement that I mentioned before, that at least one of the annual goals that are established by the board and the superintendent before September 15 for the superintendent has to relate to student achievement. My experience has been that most boards have had a student achievement goal and the superintendent's goals and objectives anyway, but that's now a requirement. The third thing that the amended policy adds, and I don't think we've covered this yet, is that any of the superintendent's goals that address student success or student well-being, including that goal about student achievement, any of those goals have to do with student success and well-being, must support progress of the established county strategic plan goals, which seems to say we want to be sure we've taken a look at our county strategic plan in developing any goals for the superintendent regarding student success and student well-being. Fourth, as I said before, up until now, there's been no requirement that a board receive third-party input in deciding what the superintendent's goals and objectives will be. And the amended policy now requires the board and the superintendent to consider input from third parties in setting those goals and objectives, although it leaves to the board and the superintendent the manner in which that input will be considered. And then finally, as we said, the general statement to the public after about the result of the evaluation must now also address not only the superintendent's overall performance, but the superintendent's progress in meeting his or her goals.
Well, Howard, thank you so much for highlighting those changes again, and actually for just sharing your time today and insights about the evaluation process as it was recently amended by the State Board of Education, and in which county boards of education all must follow regarding the evaluation of their superintendent's performance starting with the 2022-2023 school year. We hope county board members and the superintendents will find the information we've provided here today useful, and to help maybe demystify the requirements of Policy 5309 and the recent amendments to that policy. As a reminder, arrangements for these episodes were made by the West Virginia School Board Association. At the association's website, listeners will find written materials that, in conjunction with this podcast, may be very helpful in understanding the obligations and options the county boards of education have in making the annual evaluation of their superintendent's performance.
Thank you, Trey. It's been a pleasure again to be with you.
Well, be sure to join us for part two of this episode of the West Virginia EDUCAST. This episode, of course, about the evaluation process, but our special guests in the part two will be representative of the State Department of Education, a county board president, and a county superintendent, and they will offer very helpful advice about the process by which boards of education and superintendents arrive by September 15th at the superintendent's goals and objectives that are so essential to assessing the superintendent's performance. Until then, I'm Trey Marone, and this is the West Virginia EDUCAST. Thanks for taking a listen.